afternoon, Milwaukee. This is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WISN. Now, I know I may be expected to, since this is my first day on the air since it happened, open the show today by discussing the number of shootings that occurred in the downtown Milwaukee Area Entertainment District on Friday night. It's not really fair to say they happened in the Deer District because none of them happened in the Deer District. They all happened beyond the perimeter of the so-called Deer District, but certainly within the Entertainment District, and occurred as thousands of people were leaving the area after Friday night's Bucks game. But I'm not going to lead the program with that. I will address that issue on today's show. I'm not going to lead the program with it. First of all, please tell me what I can say that I haven't said 9,000 times already. And again, I understand that my role here isn't necessarily to get something done or to accomplish any good. But I've acknowledged in the past that I don't think I've accomplished a damn thing when it comes to the issue of crime. Never mind in Milwaukee, anywhere. So I'm going to lead with something else where maybe I can have some influence, and which draws attention to a different, absurd, ridiculous situation about what happens when the voters choose to elect an adult liberalist governor and his staff is run by radicals. So we're going to enter that one first. Quit yelling at us already. All right, I will. Let's give you the 3 o'clock hour when I have an announcement to make. We had, as you know, by the way, maybe not all of you know, somebody's bitching to me about what happened on my program on Friday. I don't have a program on Friday. I've made this clear for 3 years. I have a program from Monday through Thursday. When somebody fills in for me Monday through Thursday, they're filling in for me. I take no responsibility for what fill-ins say, but at least it's then my program. The Friday program is called The Friday Show. Isn't it a Friday show for the Friday afternoon show? So if you have a complaint about that, stop complaining to me about it. It's not my show on Fridays, in the same way that if you're listening at 4:30 on Saturday afternoon, that's not my show. It'd be like if you go to a Methodist church and you don't like something that the minister is saying, you complain to the Pope. What can he do about it? Anyway, who was on the Friday show? Who? Ben Young. Well, got to bitch to him for crying out loud. What are you complaining to me about? First of all, what do you want me to do? I don't even remember because I stopped reading it because they're complaining about the Friday show and I don't do said on your show Friday. That's what the guy said. I don't have a show on Friday. It's, by the way, not a new thing. I haven't had a show on Friday for 3 years. Spring Green Cash. Oh, I was going to make an announcement before I started that ranting and raving. I was going to say I do 4 shows a week, and last week we had 4 winners on my program alone in the Spring Green Cash Contest. Now, I did not say we had a winner every day. It's even better than that. We had, and I don't know how many other shows in the whole iHeart company have done this, but I think this is about the 5th or 6th double we've had. We had 2 winners on Thursday. And used to be that they assigned me a word to read 3, 4, 5, and 6. Now it's only 3, 4, and 5. So there's 25% fewer chances to be able to do it. But we had winners on the program on Thursday's program, 2 separate winners, we had a winner Monday and Tuesday and then 2 more on Thursday. I've got a little bit of detail that maybe I can mention about those names a little bit later on, but let's get going on it and see if we can keep this thing rolling. 4 winners last week. See if we can't get another one going today. The nationwide keyword this hour in the Spring Green Cash Contest is money, M-O-N-E-Y. And again, for those of you new, don't be clever, put a dollar sign. No, you got to spell it out because it's digital. It's a computer that reads this, and it's obviously reading for the correct word. You got to spell it right. M-O-N-E-Y. You have until 3:55 to go to newstalk1130.com, enter the word money to enter the contest for this hour. You can win $1,000. We do not have Paul here today. He's gone. So Dave Michaels is in here. Now, I'm going to share with you this story. This is what it's come to. This story is so absurd, yet true. And that's the point. So absurd, yet true. As you know, lefties are making up lies all the time. For example, the Russia collusion hoax was a total made-up lie. It was made up by the Clinton campaign, fed to the media, fed to the Justice Department, pursued by an independent special counsel for several years. It was a total lie. They had to make up that lie because they didn't have any actual dirt on Trump. I not only don't have to make up these lies, I am telling you, I couldn't make this one up. I think I, first of all, am funnier than most talk show hosts. B, I think I'm very, very good at drawing attention to the foibles of the left. And while this example, hilarious, if it was an exaggeration, would be a hilarious exaggeration, I'm not sure that my mind is actually broadened enough to liberal stupidity to have gotten there. And I'm way more on to liberals that Paul never can understand what liberals are going to say. I can pretty much, you know, if you tell me that they've done something stupid and get it in an area, I can pretty much wander over there because I have the I understand how far off into Wackoville they are. This is a party that's ideological leaders. Ideological leaders are the squad. Anything they say eventually becomes policy for them. But even by these standards, as I say, the story is beyond belief. Yet, when you hear the partial reaction to it, you'll understand all sorts of things that you need to know, including one of the major problems that we have in Wisconsin, the Madisonization of state government, the Madisonization really of the entire establishment, and the Madisonization of the business community. So here's the story. And again, you're going to hear this and you're going to think I'm exaggerating it. You put a Bible in front of me. I should have a Bible in here. That'd be over the top, wouldn't it? Yeah, I put my hand on the Bible and say, I don't make things up. I sometimes make mistakes. I don't make things up. I don't need to swear on a stack of Bibles. I'm not like the lefties just lying about everything. The University of Wisconsin-Madison today announced the hiring of a new chancellor. You're going to hear, you're just not going to believe. The new chancellor of UW-Madison used to run the UCLA, still runs the UCLA Law School, where 3 years ago, she tried to hire Hunter Biden. You're already laughing. I'm not done with this sentence. Dave Michaels is already laughing. She tried to hire Hunter Biden. What do you think he was going to teach on? Drug policy! Reported widely in 2020, Hunter Biden touted connection last year while pitching UCLA law on letting him teach drug policy course. During the 2020 campaign, his father, Joe Biden, said he was going to be teaching a course at the UCLA Law School. Hunter Biden himself went on and on about what it was that he intended to teach. The UCLA Law School is run by the woman who today was announced as the new chancellor of UW-Madison-Manukin. In making the pitch to be hired to teach a course at the UCLA Law School, Hunter Biden talked about his connections, as reported by the Daily Caller. Hunter cited in his letter to UCLA about teaching there, quote, "I will have some combination of key decision makers, leading thinkers, policy implementers, and grassroots advocates as guests for each topic." He then ticked off examples. And I'm, by the way, going to read verbatim, meaning I'm not going to correct Hunter's grammatical errors. For instance, "I'd like to have former attorneys general." He not only says attorneys general, he puts an apostrophe between the Y and the S, which is even more wrong. "Former attorneys general Dustin McDaniel of Arkansas and Patrick Lynch of Rhode Island to discuss their roles in the state class action suits brought against Purdue Pharma and possibly a prosecutor involved in the criminal cases against the Sackler family. For Plan Colombia, the El Chapo extradition, again, this is what he wrote. For Plan Colombia, I don't know, Plan Colombia. For Plan Colombia, the El Chapo extradition, I'm certain I could get former President Pastrana of Colombia to discuss how he implemented Plan Colombia with the U.S. government, along with Christopher Patala and Manus Cooney, who were both chiefs of staff, he's got a wrong apostrophe in there, Democrat and Republican, to the Judiciary Committee at the time. I would also invite former FBI Director Louis Freeh and possibly the U.S. attorney responsible for that extradition and indictment. For the class on discrimination, for the class, he puts an for maybe Hunter's already got the Joe thing going on in here. For the class on decriminalization, on decriminalization, I would invite Governor Newsom, maybe a long shot, but I know he would consider it if his schedule allows. The list goes on. UCLA is claiming that Hunter never formally submitted all of the paperwork necessary for the application. And that's the reason that he never went on to actually teach the course. Mnuchin, the dean of the law school at UCLA, has been named the new chancellor of UW-Madison. Now, in addition to the Hunter Biden teaching the drug course on drugs, which again, I'm just telling you, I think I'm a pretty funny guy. If you ask me, what is Hunter Biden going to teach the class? I'm not even sure my mind, I would have gotten to the point of safeguarding computers or something with the laptop or something. I don't know that I could have gotten to the point of teaching a class on drugs. In addition to that, Mnuchin is a loud and strong advocate of critical race theory. This is going, by the way, going to be the new frontier. We have succeeded in getting a lot of local school boards to deny that they teach critical race theory in the public schools, but there's no denials at all coming from the university. And now UW-Madison has hired a major leading advocate of critical race theory to be the chancellor of the university. So what they did here, and by the way, if you're wondering who does the hiring, the UW Board of Regents runs the system, and the Board of Regents and the president of the system combine, of course, to hire the chancellors for the institution. The position of president is the position that Tommy Thompson held on an interim basis. Unclear to me as to who actually was on the search committee for the UW-Madison chancellor position. But after this university, only a couple of years ago, in an attempt, when the university was a chaos, they couldn't find anybody to be the assistant president. The finalists dropped out. They had nobody to lead it. COVID was breaking out right and left. That's when they, in desperation, turned to Tommy Thompson, thinking that he'd help navigate the storm for the night. And he did. Some people felt that Tommy was running it too far from the left, but a lot of people thought too far from the right. But the fact of the matter is that this is a ship that's almost impossible to steer, and then COVID made it worse. And the fact of the matter is the UW actually seemed to be cognizant enough of picking a unifier that they chose somebody that pretty much people on all sides would be okay with. And then they turn around after this and choose a radical wingnut. Now, the former chancellor of UW-Madison is Becky Blank. Becky Blank was a lefty crackpot. But by these, you need to understand this. Becky Blank is 15 miles to the right of this nut from UCLA. Becky Blank would like work with the business community and had an open door policy. And UW-Madison, as you know, never came down with a full vaccination requirement or anything like that. They were more reasonable than Marquette was with regard to vaccination. In fact, Mnuchin, the new chancellor of UW-Madison, was a strong advocate of UCLA of mandatory vaccination of all students. This despite the fact that she ran the law school, and you would think that she would have at least some awareness of the importance of religious freedom, not to mention medical freedom. So anyway, the new chancellor of UW-Madison is this left-wing flaming liberal from the UCLA Law School. There's more to the story, though. This decision to hire her is being condemned by some Republican leaders today. State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss put out a strong statement of criticism over the hiring of Mnookin. I then inquired of the Republican candidates for governor, I didn't bother to ask Rampton, if they had anything to say on this, and I have statements of criticism of the decision from Kevin Nicholson's campaign and Rebecca Clayfish's campaign, both of which have now put out public statements. As of airtime, there has been no statement from the Tim Michaels campaign, given the general amateurishness that I have seen so far from the Michaels campaign. It may not have dawned on them that this might be a problem. We also have a statement from State Senator Steve Noss. Steve Noss has been the longtime chairman or vice chairman of the committee that oversees the university. Let's start with Steve Noss's statement. Senator Steve Noss, Republican of Whitewater, vice chairman of the Senate University and Technical Colleges Committee, released the following statement in response to the UW System Board of Regents selecting Jennifer Mnookin as the next chancellor at UW-Madison. Unfortunately, the UW System Board of Regents missed a great opportunity to find a chancellor that would be more representative of the people of Wisconsin. It is not shocking that the current majority of Evers' appointees on the Board of Regents would opt for a West Coast liberal with no real connection to the values and character of Wisconsin taxpayer and families. Jennifer Mnookin has a very clear history of advocating for the forced indoctrination of college students with critical race theory. She has openly supported mandatory COVID-19 vaccinations regardless of the right of individuals to make that health care determination for themselves. It has also been reported that Mnookin met with the scandal-plagued Hunter Biden in 2019 and supported him joining the UCLA faculty to instruct students on drug policies. The Hunter Biden situation is so absurd and absolutely disqualifying of her ability to make sound judgments. If the Board of Regents truly believes that Mnookin is the best choice, then the next Republican governor and legislature should find it impossible to provide more tax dollars to allow the board to increase tuition. Now, Senator Noss in that statement alluded to what the problem is. I don't believe a lot of people are aware all that they're doing when they elect a governor. The governor of Wisconsin, he has some of the broadest powers of any, maybe the broadest powers of any governor of the 50 states. The governor of Wisconsin de facto controls the entire UW system. The UW system is controlled by the Board of Regents, and the members of the Board of Regents, all but one, I believe, are appointed by the governor. So when the governor comes in, they don't immediately have control because they're staggered terms. But as time goes along, eventually a majority of the board are appointees of the current governor. And now that Evers has been in for nearly 4 years, he has a majority of the Board of Regents. Now, you all know the game that they try to play with Evers, in which they try to pass him off as a moderate. But the fact of the matter is that he staffed his administration with radicals. And the people that he's put on the Board of Regents are quite a few radicals, which is why they're going to opt at the opportunity. They know that there's some chance that Tony Evers won't be reelected. The position of UW-Madison chancellor, people tend to stay in there. I don't know how long Becky Blank was there. I think a decade at least. They tend to be there for a long period of time. So let's put in place somebody as far to the left as you possibly can get away with it. As I say, far to the left as you can. Can you go any farther to the left than somebody that is a shill for critical race theory and wanted to get Hunter Biden hired at UCLA to teach about drugs? So it's obviously a legitimate issue for the gubernatorial campaign, because one of the things that the governor does is appoint the Board of Regents, and they appoint the people who run the universities. This is a statement from Rebecca Clayfish. The Board of Regents' decision to hire a woke radical like Dr. Mnookin is infuriating. Our universities need to focus on building a strong economy and workforce, not force-feeding liberal ideology to Wisconsin students. Unfortunately, decisions like this on the Board of Regents make Wisconsin moms and dads consider sending their kids out of state where they can get an honest education. This ridiculous mindset demonstrates why we need to drain the Madison Swamp to get away from this crazy groupthink. As governor, at a Badger alum, I will prioritize appointing Board of Regents members who will value 21st century skills and free speech, unlike Tony Evers, who caves to the liberal education elitists every time. So that's the statement now from Rebecca Clayfish, and I think it's a very good statement, and it's directly to the point here. First of all universities are going to be facing declines in enrollment because of the declining birth rate with millennials having fewer children. It's just starting to hit the universities, what's been experienced at the elementary schools for years, but it won't really peak there for 5 or 6 or 7 years. There's going to be significant budget pressure simply because there's going to be more competition among universities for a fewer number of students. Secondly, there are lots of indications that the Generation Zs are not all opting for college in the same way the millennials did, that they simply don't buy into the need for a college degree or the massive amounts of student loans when there are so many other skilled trade professions out there that they can go into without a college degree. So at a time in which the university is going to have to be marketing itself for the needs of actual students that are out there instead, you're going to go with a lefty ideologue who, by the way, the thing that she administers over at UCLA, can you come up with a more ill-tuned, or that's not bad, a more inappropriate or inapt background for the leader of a university as we face into the future here than somebody that's running the law school? Boy, they're really on top of workforce needs. The law school. The UCLA law, just saying it, the UCLA law school, you can imagine this. Bunch of radical flamethrowers teaching radical flamethrowers. As I said, there are other statements. Here's Kevin Nicholson's statement. He put out a tweet here in addition to a statement. I'm going to read the tweet. It is insane that the UW-Madison Board of Regents has appointed a new chancellor that supports vaccine mandates and CRT. Our political class is rotten to the core. If you want to see our society put back on track, then I'm your candidate for governor. As I say, there's been nothing yet from Tim Michaels. Kevin Nicholson's tweet links up to tweets that were put out by Jennifer Mnookin, in which she authors an op-ed on why universities should require vaccines in order for students to attend, and another tweet in which she carries on and crows about how wonderful it is that they push critical race theory on the UCLA campus. As I said a little bit earlier, Speaker Voss was the first to fire away and criticize the decision. So, as I say, this is clearly being condemned by more than a few Republicans in this state. And I think it's likely to become an issue in the race for governor. The fact of the matter is the Board of Regents is under the control of Tony Evers' appointees, and Tony Evers' appointee has just put in place a pro-vaccine mandate, pro-critical race theory in the universities, individual from UCLA to run UW-Madison. People at the local high school and grade school level are appalled that this crap is being put into the public schools, and now Evers is guaranteeing that we put it into the university system as if you needed to make UW-Madison even more woke? I mean, think about this. The Board of Regents, well, you know, the problem at UW-Madison is it's just not liberal enough. The place is a left-wing loony bin, and they're trying to shove it farther to the left. Now, I want to develop this story further, though, because I said that this has a lot to do with the Madison Swamp. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel is running the same story that all the other Gannett papers in the state are running, and Gannett has, I don't know, zillions of papers in the state. They've got the Green Bay paper, they've got the Apple, there's a zillion of them. And they all run the same stuff. I've sent several emails to the reporter who Name is Kelly Meyerhofer. She just came over there from the Wisconsin State Journal in Madison. And asked her why the story on JS Online doesn't include anyone criticizing the appointment. This appointment is being ripped from just about every source right of center in the state. Furthermore, the reporter didn't put anything in the story indicating that this was a leading proponent of critical race theory. Not to mention a simple Google search would have produced the Hunter Biden connection. But aside from not having enough initiative or enterprise to point out the radicalism in the background of this left-wing wacko Mnuchin, when actual leading Republicans are putting out public statements and the Journal won't even cover them, that is simply purging stories from the news. Without regard to whether they agree with Speaker Voss's criticism or Steve Noss's criticism or Rebecca Clayfish's criticism or Kevin Nicholson's criticism or my criticism or anybody else who dares to criticize this, the fact of the matter is that they had chosen someone that one lefty in the state was bothered by. That's all you'd be hearing about. But there's more. And this is probably my most important takeaway from this story. And it's an indication of the problem with the Madisonization of the lobbying class, including the people who purport to speak for conservatives. The leading business organization in the state is Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. As you know, I've been something of a critic of the organization. I think they take in a lot of dues money. They do some good work and political action, but they are pathetic when it comes to actually taking on the state government establishment and representing the needs of the business community. They were pathetic wimps when it came to the Evers dictums on COVID and the restrictions that were put on businesses. Here, we have, I would say, almost want to take back what I was about to say. I was going to say the number one issue facing businesses right now is workforce shortages. I might almost have to take that back. Cost of goods in the supply chain. We've got Joe Biden's created so many crises that figuring out what the worst one is right now is a real battle. But certainly workforce development and getting a qualified workforce and dealing with the employee shortage at all levels, from the grunt level no skill to the highest skill jobs, is a major priority for businesses. They are all discussing it. So here's Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce and UW-Madison, the largest university in the state and obviously the largest public university in the state, goes and hires somebody who has no interest in these issues but instead wants to push critical race theory. You'd think WMC, Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, might have something to say about that. And again, here's the whole problem with this lobbying class being sitting there in Madison. I sent an email to Nick Novak, who is the FLAC. That's the spokesperson for Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Nick, is WMC going to issue any statement on UW's hiring of a left-wing hack who is on record supporting critical race theory's UW-Madison chancellor? Response from Nick Novak, WMC does not plan on issuing a statement regarding the new UW-Madison chancellor. So the state's leading business organization, leading lobbying group for businesses in the state of Wisconsin, has nothing to say on this. You see the problem here when business groups like this get so linked with the Republican Party. Because these business groups, as long as they have lobbyists and decision makers like Scott the Burnout Manley and some of the other people who run WMC making their decisions, they are no more likely than to take on UW-Madison than I am to challenge Tyson Fury to a boxing match. I had a pause to come up with that, but it wasn't bad. I mean, for a guy who's had a stroke, you know, that was pretty good. I mean, I'm George Foreman. I mean, how dated do you want me to be? For those of you who don't know who Tyson Fury is, he's the best heavyweight I've seen since Oh, he's better than Tyson. He would have killed Tyson. The only way he loses to Tyson is if he couldn't reach low enough to hit him. I mean, Mike Tyson was very short, and Tyson Fury's like literally like 6'10". I think since Ali, that's what I would say. Certainly better than Holmes. Foreman, way better than Foreman. Foreman's reign as champion was brief. Better than Frazier. Anyway, that's a pretty good example. All right, I'm done praising my analogy here of as dumb as me taking on Tyson Fury in a boxing match. It's not going to happen. In the same way, WMC and the people that run it are not going to alienate. First of all, I guarantee you just about that whole staff went to UW-Madison. They don't want to hack off their friends. These are the people that they see at the Badger basketball games, and they were all part of the network of the club, and instead let UW-Madison fall. And by the way, they do these rankings every year of best universities in America. There was a time UW-Madison was on a lot of top 10 lists. I'm telling you, they don't make the top 30 on most of them anymore. The academics have declined at that institution. The costs have exploded. And it's because the university has become far more interested in pursuing radical ideology than it has been in educational excellence. And now this. The choice of the chancellor is critical because the chancellor sets the direction for the prioritization, the budgetary decisions, and so on for the entire institution. And I get that if you're hiring a chancellor, you're going to get a lefty because who else is in university administration? I mean, there might be four right-wingers, other than the people that like work at Hillsdale or, say, Liberty. There might be four conservatives in all of education administration in America. So I get you're going to get a liberal. They chose a left-wing. Not the woman was talking to Hunter Biden about having him come to UCLA to teach about drugs. She's a shill for critical race theory at a time in which all over Wisconsin, voters in the most recent election just last month threw out numerous school board members who supported putting critical race theory in the public schools. Yet you can't get WMC to criticize that again. If I owned a business in this state, I wouldn't give money to WMC. I get they're generally on the right side of issues, but most of the time they just take dives. This is the type of issue where they could weigh in. If they put out a pound the staple statement that this is an insult to the business community in the state, you might actually get the Board of Regents to reconsider this decision. But that whole Madison gang, it is a swamp. But Clayfish now is on this through the use of the terminology of the swamp herself. And I've been talking about this forever and ever and ever. When you've got all these organizations that are based in Madison, including those that claim to speak from the conservative perspective, they become terribly co-opted. So what's obvious, and I wonder if it even dawned on some of the people at WMC, that this might hack off some of the larger businesses in the state, that UW-Madison, which is a source for employees for numerous large businesses in this state, is now going to be run by some crackpot from UCLA who pushes critical race theory, who wanted to mandate vaccinations in order to go to a public university, and was prepared to hire Hunter Biden to teach a course about drugs. Those business executives don't like that. Trust me. It's going to be the one only good thing that comes out of this. And there is a good thing. Now, they always say there's a silver lining in every cloud. I think that that's probably true. But in some cases, the silver lining is very thin to the point of being almost imperceptible. But the one that does come out of this is an issue that the Republicans can run on for governor. Unless, of course, the candidate is Michaels, who might not even be aware by the general election that this happened, since he hasn't. He has now put out a statement. In other words, I finally get it to his attention here, or did he notice that the statement came out from everybody else? Oh, Michaels called, or his people called? His people called. So we have a statement now from Tim Michaels. Okay, and as I say, for those of you who think I should be tutoring Tim Ranthan more seriously, I'm sorry. I just think he's headed for 5% of the vote, and I don't treat him more seriously. But the three major Republican candidates for governor all now have statements of condemnation and criticism. I don't think the Republican Party of Wisconsin has anything to say, but again, they're based in Madison. It's the same problem that I've cited so many times with regard to anything that's based in Madison. It's a club. Fortunately, Speaker Voss, who I think has gotten too tight with the Madison community, he was the first to fire out at this, and I praise him for this. I've criticized Robin, as you know, on a lot of things, but I praise him for this. Have any agendas here? None of this is personal. Voss was, I think, right to be. He jumped on this right away, and he did it shortly after this atrocious hiring decision was made. Anyway, going back to the news media, this is just, it's a stick in the eye of anybody who's right of center in the state of Wisconsin after all we have been through. To go ahead. By the way, the fact that they felt the need to go all the way to UCLA, like there weren't enough left-wing nuts in Wisconsin that they could hire? You know how lefty you have to be in order to advance in the University of California system? I mean, the one thing you'd say about Mnookin is she probably fits in at UCLA, even by those standards. I just wonder, would any other law school in the state of California have thought about putting Hunter Biden on staff to teach a course about drugs? Again, even by the standards of lefties, isn't this especially insane? Nonetheless, the point that I was going to make, even with number of leading Republicans on this story, the fact that at least as of 25 minutes ago, the last that I checked, JS Online hasn't done any story on any of this criticism, nor did they do any type of bait digging to expose the toxically radical background of this left-wing crackpot that's now going to run UW-Madison. What other point? Late last week, Tony Evers, after initially having nothing to say, leaned on his parole commission to reverse the decision to release on parole Douglas Balsowicz, the guy that stabbed his wife to death in West Allis 42 times. Balsowicz had served barely over a quarter of his sentence. The story got significant criticism last week from me and many others. Evers initially had nothing to say. When it dawned on him that this was a major political ad to run against him, Evers' people contacted the parole commission, asked them to reverse the decision, and they did reverse the decision. It still begs the point of how these things happen in the first place without Evers being aware. I suspect either Tony Evers had no idea that this thing was coming down, has no contact with the Board of Regents, or because he's just a left-wing bureaucrat himself, it doesn't even dawn on him how these things play. This is what happens when you have not so much a left-wing radical governor as a clueless governor who is walked all over by a left-wing staff. I've compared it to the Biden administration, but I've stressed that there's a difference between Biden's incompetence and Evers' incompetence. Biden has lost it. Evers just isn't very bright and isn't aware or on to anything. It's not because of diminished mental capacity. It's just that he's a very ordinary and average guy who doesn't have any feel or sense for anything other than pushing educational papers back and forth. So the left-wingers are going to do what left-wingers do. And if they want to put in a lefty as a radical lefty as head of UW-Madison, they're going to do it. Now, again, I think this is another issue that can be exploited by the Republicans to be a political ad because it can draw attention to when you choose a governor, you're affecting all of these things, all of these areas. That the naming of the Board of Regents is one of the many duties that you have as governor and important not to have left-wing nuts that are out there doing this. But I don't think it even dawned on Evers that this would be a problem because I don't even think he knew who was going to be hired because he's not aware of anything. Remember the old, I like to analogize things. Some of my analogies, I admit, come from too far in the past. Except, you know, it's hard to do TV ones that are too far in the past because all shows are on reruns. I mean, like, that story I did a few weeks ago in which more people have watched The Sopranos in the last 3 years than watched it during the time it was on the air because of its available on the streaming services. That just really blew me away. Because The Sopranos were by cable. It was the most successful at the time, most successful cable show of all time. There were times it was number one in the overall and for a pay channel. I mean, it was an extra. HBO's an extra. They're often number one in the ratings for the week. I mean, it was an extraordinary thing, but still, the popularity of streaming and people going back at, you know, and watching shows that came from years earlier. So anyway, I don't think this reference is too dated, but Evers' administration of the state reminds me of this pretty good. Remember Mr. Carlson from WKRP in Cincinnati? Kind of like the general manager who cluelessly never knew what was going on. Isn't that with Evers? Evers is the Mr. Carlson of the state of Wisconsin. Yeah, walking around like a big shot and so on, but no clue what the music is being played, no clue what this is, you know, no clue with anything else. I mean, I think that's pretty, these come off the top of my head. This is not like I'm some writer who's got 45 minutes to come up with the perfect example. You did a lot of patting yourself. Well, yeah, I did. Gonna check something here. Ho ho! Well, we've accomplished a few things. That email that I sent to the reporter, Kelly Meyer Offer from the Journal, asking her why she won't report on any of the Republicans that are blasting this. We now have an update to the story. I'm guessing she probably, it never even dawned on her that anybody would have a problem with hiring this group. Republicans raise concerns. Voss, the most powerful person in the Republican-controlled legislature, had a different take on Mnuchin after reviewing her social media and other online resources. Federal campaign records show Mnuchin has donated about $5,500 to Democratic causes, including the presidential campaigns of Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden since 2008. Another concern for Boas was what he described as Mnuchin's support for COVID-19 vaccine mandates. He pointed to an op-ed she wrote for the Los Angeles Times in early 2021 that urged vaccines to be made available to colleges sooner rather than later to ensure campus life could return to full force. Mnuchin also shared her Twitter account, an LA Times column supportive of UC System's vaccine mandate. Then mentioned the critical race theory component to this. Quote statements from Nicholson and Nicholson's campaign and Clayfish's campaign, as I did. I think the Bicos campaign was just late to the party and jumping in on this, but at least they're there. Spokesperson for UW-Madison says even Republican appointees on the Board of Regents supported this. And again, this is the point that I make about this Madisonization of the Democratic and Republican parties. When these decisions come out of Madison, I've raised the point forever about moving some of these agencies out of Madison. Just you take the UW system as an example. The UW system has 27 campuses, including the so-called extensions, 26 physical campuses. They now consider the two-year schools to be arms of the four-year schools. So maybe you would say 14 plus the other. The point is this. There's no rule that says the system itself has to be headquartered in Madison. It's the UW system. UW-Madison is the largest school in the system, but it doesn't have to be there. But we put all these things in Madison, meaning everybody that runs it is from Madison. The lobbying institutions are all run by people who live in Madison. The lobbyists, and they've all got this same sort of leftist mindset, which is different from, it's the only place that comes close to it in terms of worldview would be like the east side of Milwaukee. And as somebody who doesn't live very far from there, I'm very familiar with that worldview is. At least, though, in the Milwaukee area, we're part of a region that has a lot of back and forth on the issues and an exchange and so on. In Madison, it's just an echo chamber. And as I say, the fact that WMC has nothing to say just shows to me what utterly useless that organization is when it comes to what the business community really needs. This is an atrocious decision. There are businesses in the state that are probably appalled by it. but the people who run WMC are too afraid of their shadows to go on and take on the UW system, which again is making a devastatingly awful decision that is going to, that's going to be characterized for the next months as a joke. I suspect that whoever wins the Republican nomination for governor could turn this into a TV ad. Tony Evers' Board of Regents shows us he run the chance of somebody who wanted to hire Hunter Biden to teach a class about drugs. I mean, the ad tells itself. But you can't get WMC to chime in on this. So as I say, this whole Madisonization thing and the Madison swamp that I've been speaking of, that Nicholson talks of and Clayfish has been talking of, this is a real thing, and it's a real problem. And as I said, there's a reason I thought I'd use more time on the show discussing this than the massive numbers of shootings that occurred outside the Milwaukee Entertainment District on Friday night. Because as I said, I am going to address that issue. I just struggle to come up with anything new on it. For those of you, though, who think that who your governor is doesn't matter, understand that it's more than simply proposing a budget and signing it. It's all of these agencies. Now, one of the problems is that even when Republicans become governors, they often choose the wrong people to run these agencies and the wrong people to put on the Board of Regents. You know what? If I was governor of the state, you know who I'd slap on the Board of Regents? I'd throw McKenna on there. I'm dead serious. She'd do it. The only way to counter this type of liberalism is to come up with people that are strong-willed and aren't going to cave and buckle. It's like the problem with the Wisconsin Election Commission. Robin Voss wasted his appointment by putting that useless Dean Knutson on there. He wasn't willing to fight. He wasn't willing to take on the hacks that run the Election Commission staff. And he certainly wasn't willing to take on the Democrats that decided to abuse their role in the Election Commission, throw off the ballots anybody that they felt like doing so. Marge Bosselman, so excited to get out of the donut lady, brings in donuts to the staff in there and just does whatever they say. These are Republican appointees. So even when you have a Republican elected who makes these appointments, it's still critical that you appoint the right people. I have my concerns that Republicans in the state Senate chose the wrong person when they chose Devin LeMahieu to be their leader. It's too early to make a permanent decision on him, but I didn't see anywhere near the kind of fight or leadership from LeMahieu that we needed during this assault on our rights that occurred during the Evers administration. Now, what LeMahieu will say, well, you know, all I do is get abuse in Madison for taking on Evers' people, and that's my point. They hear all of this in Madison. They never hear enough from the rest of us, which is why it's incumbent on people like me to raise our voices and make it clear that this is a state of nearly 6 million people. It's not a state of the 500,000 or whatever it is that live in Dane County. But those 500,000, that's even high. I don't think it's quite 500,000, but the population of Dane County, whatever it is, they have a disparate impact and influence on the decision makers in the state because that's where everybody is. As bad as some of the chancellors are in the UW system, and there's some bad ones, there's some Lulus, the likeliest one to go and choose a left-wing nut like Mnuchin is going to be UW Madison. And again, it's a product of where that institution is. But the thing of it is, UW-Madison isn't bankrolled by the city of Madison or Dane County. It's bankrolled by the taxpayers of the state of Wisconsin. And all of us have suffered as that university has gotten a little bit worse and a little bit more woke every single year. We've got a break. It's 3:55 at News Talk 1130 WIS.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. Very shortly here, I'm going to give you the 4 o'clock hour word in the Spring Green Cash Contest. We have some Packers news today, and it's very big news. The Packers signed Jaire Alexander to a four-year contract extension. It's big money for a defensive back. 4 years, $84 million, and a chunk of it is guaranteed in the form of a signing bonus. So the Packers obviously have been, they've developed so many outstanding young players over the last several years, and they're not able to re-sign all of them. For example, they made the decision to let Valdes-Scantling, the receiver, leave the team, and they're prioritizing signing others, and they made the decision to give a lot of money to Alexander. Now, the problem with football and big contracts in general is this. More so than any other sport, you're playing roulette with regard to an injury. The obvious example of that is Bakhtiari. The Packers made David Bakhtiari the highest-paid offensive lineman in all of football, and I swear it's like 3 days later that he tore his ACL, and nobody knows what David's future is going to be. By the same token, the Las Vegas Raiders have made a massive commitment to Devontae Adams, not only in terms of all the money that they gave him, but the draft choices they gave up to Green Bay. And, you know, Adams, spectacular wide receiver, but so many players in football get injured, and you tie so much of an investment into a player who can get hurt in a sport that, as I say, more so than any other. So that's the risk associated with giving a lot of money to any one particular player, that particularly with all the money, the portion of the money that's guaranteed on it, you're stuck with that contract if the player ends up being injured, or even if they're not constantly out, they have nagging injuries or they regress or whatever. Still, I think Alexander is, people are going to argue with me on this, I think he's the best player on the Packer defense. Some people would say Devondre Campbell. Some would say either of the, some people might say Zadarius Smith. Kenny Clark is, but we get mentioned on there. I just think that in a passing sport, to have a lockdown corner, I mean, so often Green Bay's opponents were throwing on the opposite side of the field than Alexander, and I'm certainly not an expert on defensive schemes, but I've heard enough people who are say that one of the benefits of Alexander was that you could put him on a top receiver without giving him help. You didn't need to double cover anyone because Alexander, your safeties obviously come over and help if the ball's being thrown, but he was able to single cover a lot of those players. So I think it's a smart decision they make to give him the money. Also, key part of the story, this was the first number one draft choice that Brian Gutekunst made as full general manager of the team. That was the 2018 draft, and Gutekunst was named the GM right at the end of the preceding 17 season, with Ted staying on as a consultant. Now, certainly Gutekunst was part of the operation when Ted was running the drafts, but Ted Thompson's, the late Ted Thompson, not to jump all over him, his last few drafts were not all that sharp, and the drafts have gotten much better under Gutekunst. That turned out to be a spectacular pick. Now, baseball story. I think I have an insight into something here. Maybe I don't, but I think I do. I believe that the Brewers are considering trading one of their starting pitchers. I'm doing a lot of reading between the lines here, but frankly, that's where most stories are that aren't on the lines yet. They're somewhere between the lines. Yesterday, Aaron Ashby came in relief of Brandon Woodruff, and for those of you who didn't see it because you were watching the Bucks at the time, lights out brilliant. He pitched four innings, didn't give up a base runner, and struck out eight hitters. You only faced 12. He's absolutely lights out. Now, he's been inconsistent as a starter, but the reports on him, they have just glowing. That he's a future starting pitcher and a future dominant starting pitcher in the mold of Woodruff or Burns, or frankly, anybody else who's on the starting staff right now. As it is, the Brewers have, injuries can always occur, but they have five starting pitchers, and there isn't a bad one of the bunch, and you can argue that all five are actually really, really good in Burns, Woodruff, Freddy Peralta, Hauser, and the guy who might be the best of all, although he stumbled over the weekend, Eric Lauer. Now you got Ashby, who is ready to start on just about any team in the major leagues, and I guess it's nice that you could have somebody come in and pitch four innings in relief, but the Brewers are one of the only teams that have an excess of strong starting pitching. In addition to that, there's a story in today's newspaper that indicates that the Brewers are ready to call up Ethan Small. He's the top pitching prospect in the system. He's at AAA Nashville right now. He's made 16 starts altogether in his AAA career, including last year, with an ERA of 2.00. Now, the Brewers' AAA pitching numbers have improved since they got out of that dump in Colorado Springs and they're in Nashville, but still, minor league starter with an ERA of 2.00 is phenomenal. The story indicates, well, they could put Ethan in the bullpen, but kind of a waste if the guy is a starting pitcher. It's not that many guys that can be dominant over multiple innings. The point that I make is with Ashby and Small both ready to emerge, the Brewers have an excess of starting pitching, and you can get so much for a strong starting pitcher. I think the Brewers are going to trade one of them. And any one of them could bring back strong return. And the reason that I think this is, we all know what the problem with the Brewers is. You know what the problem with the Brewers is? Everybody knows. They can't hit. Now, in fairness to the Brewers, hitting is at close to an all-time low this year. In fact, I checked the stats here in today's newspaper. As bad as the Brewers have hit, they have a better team batting average than Atlanta, who they play starting tonight. Atlanta's the defending world champion. The Brewers are hitting .236 as a team, Atlanta .228, and the Brewers have more home runs. The Brewers have 49 home runs, Atlanta has 44. So while the Brewers are in the bottom half of baseball with regard to hitting, lots of teams are having bad hitting. But if you could get to the Brewers to the level of average or slightly above average hitting combined with this pitching, you've got something. And I think you could get a major league ready star hitter in exchange for one of the Brewers pitchers. And I even have an idea of who that might be. There have been rumors about whether or not the guy might be on the move. Kansas City has a gold glove outfielder named Andrew Benintendi. He's hitting .316 this year. He's a career .285 to .290 hitter. He doesn't have a lot of power, although American Family Field always seems to help guys with their power. But he hits like 15 home runs a year. I think last year he had 17. Now, he plays left field. He's a gold glover. The Brewers have a clear weakness on their team offensively. The center field play has been, they're getting no hitting from Lorenzo Cain and very little hitting from Tyrone Taylor. That's where the gap is. They could bring him in and have him play left field and simply make Christian Yelich the full-time DH. Or they could try him at center field. If you can be a gold glover at left field, I have to think you'd be able to play center field. I think a guy like that you could get plus more for one of the Brewers pitchers. So which pitcher would they trade? Well, you're not going to trade Corbin Burns. You could get a ton for Brandon Woodruff. I think you can get a ton for Freddie Peralta because Freddie is signed to a spectacular contract. Freddie is not making, for the very reason that he's attractive for the Brewers to keep because he's signed for the long term at low money, think of what the value he'd be for another team. Again, Adrian Hauser is... There are teams in baseball that Adrian Hauser is the ace on the staff. Lauer right now might be as good a pitcher as there is in all of baseball. So, I mean, I'm just saying that if your goal is to win it all this year, you could get a guy like Benintendi and maybe two or three other prospects in exchange for a big-time starting pitcher. And I kind of think the Brewers are going to make a trade in which they're going to move a pitcher to get more hitting. And if we know anything about David Stearns, the Brewers general manager, this is the time of the year that he makes the huge move. This was the time last year that he made the Willy Adames move. By the way, the Brewers have not announced if Willy's going to go to the DL. Willy's having a weird year. He's got a lot of home runs, but again, he's not hitting either. He's hitting .208, but I think he has 8 or 9 home runs. So that's my thought on the Brewers. I mean, they're in a position right now in which, even considering that pitching has been great all over baseball, the Brewers have the best pitching staff there is, and they have 5 outstanding starters and 2 potentially outstanding starters, you know, literally warming up in the bullpen in Ashby and Small. And to work off of that strength and try to go to a team that's probably already out of it, like Kansas City, grab a hitter off of that team in exchange for a young pitcher, I think you could just more than a hitter for one of the Brewers pitchers. So that's my thought as to what's going on there. It's 4:12 at News Talk 1130 W. Standing up for Milwaukee, this is the... Mark Belling, late afternoon show on News Talk 1130 WISN. Let's start the hour real quickly by going back to the last hour. In fairness to Tim Michaels, I want to read the statement he put out today on the new chancellor at UW-Madison. For those of you who didn't hear the first hour, we spent a fair amount of time discussing the decision by the University of Wisconsin Board of Regents, controlled by Tony Evers appointees, in choosing a radical nut, the dean of the law school at UCLA, to be the new chancellor of UW-Madison. Barbara Manukin has written extensively on critical race theory and the importance of it. She's a supporter of mandating vaccines at the university level, and she was in discussions with Hunter Biden to have him teach a course at the UCLA Law School on, of all things, drugs. The decision to hire Manukin has been criticized by a number of leading Republicans, State Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, State Senator Steve Noss, candidates for Governor Rebecca Clayfish, and Kevin Nicholson. And we did get this statement after the show started from Tim Michaels, and I'll, in fairness to him, read his statement. Wisconsinites expect all our campuses to be places that welcome debate, where conservatives can also have a voice. Critical race theory serves only to divide people, and we should reject state funding for it, wherever it may be, wherever it may appear, be it in higher ed or K-12. Education's main responsibility is to prepare students for a productive career, not indoctrinate them with radical left-wing ideology. And Tim Michaels, a spokesman, also said, regarding the vaccine mandates, which Manukin supports, Tim obviously opposes them, and the Michaels Corporation did not have one ever. All right, let's move on. Let's turn our attention from higher education to public schools in Wisconsin. Last week on the show, I drew attention to the fact that a conservative legal organization in Wisconsin, Wisconsin Institute of Law and Liberty, is essentially demanding that the Keele School District, Keele is, I mentioned on the program last week, between Fond du Lac and Sheboygan, sort of. If you take a line between Fond du Lac and Sheboygan, you'd have to go north a bit. It's like if you go back, if you're heading north on 57, I think New Holstein's the first one. I think then comes Keele, and then I think comes Chilton, and then I think comes Hilbert. I don't recall that for certain because they all seem the same to me, but that's the way. Anyway, Keele. Early in my radio career, I actually broadcast a football game from Keele. The most of all the things I've done on radio, nothing was ever more preposterous than that game. Our station was in Oshkosh. Well, not only a hike, why would an Oshkosh station do a game? There was a backstory behind it. We had a general manager who was trying to get us to get into the Calumet County market. Calumet County's on the other side of Lake Winnebago, and you could hear us just fine, you know, along the shoreline in there and so on. So we did a weekly football game, a game of the week, and it was usually one of the Oshkosh schools, either Oshkosh West or Oshkosh North, occasionally Oshkosh Lourdes. Every now and then we do Nina, so on. They wanted us to do a game in Calumet County, so we did a game in which Keele played somebody else. It must have been early November. I'm just telling you. And my job was, I was the sideline reporter, and I did it from the sideline and did my analysis. The play-by-play guy was in the booth, and we did sideline analysis. We're way ahead of our times. This is before everybody is out there on the sidelines. The color commentator was on the sidelines, and I used a broadcast remote thing called a Marty. And the way I would hear the play-by-play guy is I would just, in my headphones, listen to the station's air signal, because we weren't out of delay. This is long before you'd put a game on delay or anything. That's how I could hear how he was saying. We didn't have two-way communication other than just listen on the air. Well, we get there, it's like 18 degrees, and the wind is howling. It was so doggone cold, and the last thing I want to do is go down there on the field. And I got bailed out, and I didn't have to go down there and do the game on the field. I was able to do it from the booth. You know why? You couldn't pick our station up in Keele. We were broadcasting a game where you couldn't even hear in a city where you couldn't hear the, you know, we have to reduce power at night and all this stuff with AM. Well, that's my Keele story. The story from Keele, where the school district is bringing sexual harassment charges against a couple of middle schoolers because They are refusing to refer to a fellow student by that student's preferred pronoun, which is they or them. It's unclear as to whether or not the student is a biological male or a biological female, but apparently these students want to refer to the other student as either he or she. And Keele's school district, backed by a pathetic school board, is charging these poor middle school kids with sexual harassment. Anyway, the update on the story is this. This story has gone national. Fox News has given it national attention, and Keele is now a national laughingstock because you have another case of a school board that simply will not take on an out-of-control school administration. Now, Keele's a little bit beyond the normal realm of the areas that we talk about here. I'm sure we have listeners in Keele, but it's not in the immediate southeastern Wisconsin area. But we saw so many cases in our immediate area where school board members got thrown out because the public was simply sick and tired of this notion that the school board doesn't think its responsibility is to stop radical, hack, pathetic administrators from abusing their power. And the principal of this school, who's trying to bring up sexual harassment charges against a kid for referring to a boy as a he or a girl as a she, whatever it is another example of where the school board has to act and tell the administration, you either change this and back off on this or we will fire you. So as I said, the good news is the story has gotten national attention. The bad news for those folks who live in Keele is don't think you can be anonymous anymore when you're going to engage in this kind of radical nuttery. It's the sort of crap you'd expect from Shorewood. For those of you who live in Keele, contact your school board members and demand that they put an end to it. These kids are being abused. It's a boy or a girl, whatever it is, to call that person a he or a she, even if that person doesn't want, is not sexual harassment. Dave Michaels may decide tomorrow that he's a toilet. That doesn't mean I should be required to grab his arm and flush him. He can consider himself whatever he wants, just as I can consider, if I want to consider myself a female, let me go ahead and consider myself a female. You can't require somebody else to consider me a female. That's the distinction. It's the middle school. Without regard to where it is. The same thing gets to be said with regard to individuals who are trying to define themselves by race other than what their clear ethnicity is. Consider yourself anything you want, like Elizabeth Warren, run around and claim that you're a Cherokee. But that doesn't mean that people who knew that she wasn't a Cherokee have to call her a Cherokee. That distinction is important. Now, to a school district that's been screwed up forever. I'm going to have to do a little bit of backing and filling on this story because it's been developing for weeks and we've covered it only sporadically. It's Wauwatosa. The Wauwatosa School District, first of all, because it's in Wauwatosa, the school district has moved dramatically to the left. It was being run into the ground by the old superintendent, Ertl, and they then made the decision to hire the ethically challenged Amon Means, former superintendent of Mequon, former superintendent of a district down in Georgia, to be their school superintendent. Wherever Means goes, there's controversy that follows. And the moment that he got to Wauwatosa, there was significant controversy, and it always has to do with questions about whether or not favoritism occurred, possibly involving preferential treatment to contractual vendors. You know the old statement about where there's smoke, there's fire? In fact, that's not always true. There isn't always fire when there's smoke. Sometimes the fire's out. I prefer to look at it when there's smoke, there may well be a fire. And when there's always smoke is an indication that you've got a fire problem. Well, the story at Wauwatosa, which was essentially dug into very aggressively by a reporter from Fox 6 named Amanda St. Hilaire, dealt with a controversy over the decision by the school district to hire a provider of educational services called Avid. The local rep for Avid is a guy named Brett Bowers. He worked for Means, the superintendent at Wauwatosa, when Means was the superintendent in Mequon. But beyond that, the administrator at Wauwatosa who pushed the hardest to hire Avid is Kristen Bowers, who's Brett Bowers' wife. So you had a school administrator pushing very hard to hire a vendor that her husband was a major player involved in. There were people behind the scenes in Wauwatosa that were apparently objecting to this, understanding this stinks to high heaven. By the way, the position that Damon Means left down in Georgia, there was controversy over the use and selection of Avid. Wherever he seems to go, seems to be the Bowers family and seems to be Avid. Again, it stinks to high heaven, and it would seem fairly obvious that this is a significant cause for a real investigation. The Wauwatosa Police Department conducted an investigation, but it wasn't a real one. That police department, I should say, is neutered. I don't know if they went in and they tried to do wiretaps. I don't know if they went in and tried to get access to text messages and so on to see who said what. It seemed to me that it was not a particularly involved investigation, but the story has continued to resonate in Wauwatosa, and it doesn't appear to be a liberal versus conservative. It appears to be an internal school district issue over the concerns by some that there's crap going on that's not on the up and up. So anyway, the backstory is Kristen Bowers resigned her position at Wauwatosa, was given money to go away, but the story has not dropped there. Fox 6 has made an open records request for various records. During a closed meeting of the school board, the president of the school board purportedly bawled out two members of the board for responding to the Fox 6 request by providing records. The school board president said, "You're over complying. You don't have to give up all of this." Well, whether the other school board member had to give him all this or not, you can't talk about that in a closed meeting. The closed meeting was not called for the purposes of discussing Fox 6's open records request. But because in Wauwatosa, they just tend to do things in Wauwatosa the way they want to do things in Wauwatosa, like allow people to violate the law right and left, night after night after night after night after night after night, supposedly objecting to police. Well, the board member who was bawled out in a private meeting for supposedly overcomplying, he went public and said, "Look, in a closed meeting, an issue that was not on our agenda for the closed meeting was brought up by the school board president. He's bawling me up for sharing open records." That school board president's name is Stephen Doman. This brings us to the development that occurred just in the last several days. Doman has now resigned as president of the school board shortly after being reelected president of the school board. He claims he's resigning after he received a threat. But the Wauwatosa police don't have any example of a threat, and they say that no threat was reported to them. I don't know if Doman is making that up because he simply can't tell the truth about anything, or if there was a threat, and if there was a threat, I don't know why he wouldn't immediately contact the police. It may well simply be that Doman no longer has the support of anyone because he keeps getting caught trying to cover up the original sin here of the fix being put in by Means and the Bowers family to dump a lot of public money onto this company, Avid. Suffice to say that Wauwatosa School District is completely bleeped up. And for those of you offended even by saying bleeped, screwed up isn't strong enough. This district several years ago passed one of the largest referendums in the history of the state of Wisconsin, despite the fact that they're seeing declining enrollment. They're swimming in all of this money. Yet, they were one of the ones that went most aggressively toward shutting down the schools, virtual learning, and so on. And now, they've spent a fortune to hire a school superintendent that always seems to have an ethical cloud hanging over his head, and immediately have been caught with all this money that they've got in their hands because they passed this referendum, gone out and put the fix in which Sweetie Pie's husband's company gets a contract from a school district now run by that guy's old boss and Sweetie Pie's current boss, with a school board that knew all about this and, again, apparently was just fine with it. It is for reasons like this that people often believe corruption occurs. I don't know if there's anything corrupt here. I don't know if anybody paid anything or anybody off or not. But if they did pay somebody off, it would at least explain why they did it. The alternative is we're simply going to break 97 laws and give contracts to whoever we want. And anybody who dares to try to tell anybody about it on our own agency. And remember, anybody elected to the school board, they're not accountable to the board president. They're accountable to the voters. If some guy objects to what they're going, he has a right to say whatever he wants. They go to a closed meeting. You can't. So even by the standards of you lefties in Wauwatosa, your school board's a mess and your school district's a mess. There's an old, old saying, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. I have a better saying, and it's one that I've learned in all my years of chasing down stories. It's a lot easier to be corrupt when you have a lot of money than no money. And again, I don't know if it's so much corruption as it is simple favoritism, and there may be a line between the two of them. But I certainly see in Wauwatosa some of the people that are not in the ins with regard to the school district are determined to draw attention to what they believe is completely inappropriate action. I'm going to plug an event here. And again, many other groups are putting on similar events to this, and I'm not trying to give favoritism to any one particular group, but the Waukesha County Republican Party next Tuesday, I stress not tomorrow, Tuesday the 24th, next week, at their offices on Pearl Street, is going to be hosting a free showing of Dinesh D'Souza's movie 2,000 Mules. This is the movie that focuses on ballot trafficking, and they refer, the 2,000 Mules refer to the voter mules, the people that were trafficking in ballots in a number of states. The same party put on a showing a couple of weeks ago of the movie Rigged. Some people are mixing up the two movies. There's two separate movies that deal with allegations of improper conduct that occurred in the 2020 election. The showing of the movie Rigged got 280 people to show up at the Republican. For people who keep saying that there are no legs to this story with regard to election irregularities, there is overwhelming interest in this issue. I mean, private groups put on showings of stuff all 280. So that was for the movie Rigged. Well, with the success of that, they're going to show Dinesh D'Souza's movie, which focuses more on the ballot trafficking. Rigged, it dealt with other issues. The ballot trafficking happens to be an issue that I've given a lot of attention to here as well. It remains unclear as to whether or not it's legal or not in the state of Wisconsin. Ballot trafficking is simply you collecting ballots on behalf of someone, you know, somebody else fills out a ballot, you collect a zillion of them and you turn them in. I believe it ought to be clearly illegal. You lose all chain of custody. There's no way of proving that the ballot was actually marked by the person who the voter is if somebody else is turning them all in. Some people say it's no different than dropping the ballot in the mailbox if you give it to old Charlie and he brings it on down there. The difference is it's a federal law offense to tamper with the mails. Once it gets into the mailbox, it's in the hands of federal authorities who've taken an oath to properly handle the mail. This ballot is given to Charlie and he's running around giving it to Frank and that's giving it to Harriet and that one's giving it to Matilda and then they bring it in. There's no controls over that at all. That's what ballot trafficking and ballot harvesting is. As an example of this is what the thing that occurred in Madison in 2020 when we held the so-called Democracy in the Park at a major park on the Capitol Square, where thousands of people turned in ballots to supposed volunteers. The ballots were brought in by all sorts of people who weren't the actual voters. There were people who had duffel bags. It's scandalous that we allow this to occur. What happens is the media keeps tying these things that happened. The ballot trafficking happened with Trump's allegation that the election wasn't legitimate. Those are separate questions as to whether or not there was tampering with the election, as to whether or not illegal activity occurred during the conduct of the election. And the media keeps trying to lump the two together. People that are trying to draw attention to the corruption that occurred in many of these elections simply think that this is sour grapes, whereas in fact, corrupt things actually occurred. And if you don't want to call them corrupt, improper things that we shouldn't allow to be legal. Now, I continue to draw attention to the fact that this ballot harvesting and ballot trafficking occurred in Wisconsin right under the noses of the Wisconsin Election Commission. The Democrats on that commission were perfectly fine with it, and so were two of the three Republicans. And those three Republicans, including the two that were perfectly fine with it, are still on the Election Commission. I have implored all of the candidates for governor to demand that the Republican state chairman demand the resignation of Marge Bosselman, the addled clerk who's on the commission, and demand that Speaker Voss demand the resignation of his designee, Dean Knutson, so that as we go into the critical 2022 elections, the Election Commission has Republicans that are not going to look the other way in which the law is being raped. So far, given the clicky nature of the Republican establishment in Madison, that has not happened. On the other hand, we got very, very good reaction from Republicans in drawing attention to the disgraceful hiring of a left-wing nut to be chancellor of UW-Madison today. So maybe there's still hope on changing the personnel of the Election Commission before old Marge and Knutson sit by and allow the Democrats to run roughshod over the law again. It is time for me to take a break. I got a really good Victor Davis Hanson piece. So much I need to get to. There are people demanding that I discuss the shootings that occurred. It's not fair to say the Deer District because it wasn't in the Deer District. It's adjacent to it. What? It's not the Deer District. I mean, it would be like saying that it happened at WISN when it happened down the street from WISN. The thing of it is, people now refer to that area as the Deer District is the specific area in that plaza where the Fiserv Forum is and certain bars that are in and so on. It was in the giant crowd near the Deer District as people were leaving that the shootings occurred. Proper to say, and some media have said entertainment district, which I think is accurate. The whole area all the way from water, then jumping across the river to the other side to Old World Third and into where the vice, that's kind of what we're calling an entertainment district in Milwaukee. That's where this was. Nonetheless, I will be addressing this, even though, as I've said, you're going to hear the same thing I always say. 448 News Talk 1130 WISN.
It's time for Rapid Traffic. Yep.
News Talk 1130 WISN. Mark Belling. Late afternoon show. Let me address the end of the Milwaukee Bucks season. Obviously, there will not be a repeat by the Bucks as NBA champions. As I said going in on Thursday's program when the Bucks were up 3-2, I still thought Boston was going to win the series. And I wasn't trying to be a Debbie Downer. Watching the series, the Bucks won two games that they were very fortunate to win, that they played almost perfect basketball in, and that the series really already should have been over. They would not have won Game 5 in Boston were it not for a fourth quarter in which literally everything went right. I'm not going to predict Boston's going to win the NBA championship because predicting who's going to win of these four teams is almost impossible, but I think it's pretty clear why the Bucks didn't win. In the end, Boston simply had more weapons, and the loss of Chris Middleton for the Bucks was especially significant given the fact that Boston has numerous guys who could score, and the Bucks demonstrated in the playoffs that they really had only two reliable scorers. After Game 6 was over, despite Giannis in the Game 6 game in Milwaukee played every bit as great as he did in Game 6, which won the NBA championship against Phoenix last year, just that he didn't get any help from anybody else. I mean, Giannis went 14 for 15 from the free throw line. He was dominant inside, all the stuff that happened in Game 6 last year, but there was nothing else. And then they went to Boston, and just look at the box score, and it tells you all. The Milwaukee Bucks guards, not counting Jrue Holiday, went 2 for 17 from the floor. I'll read the point totals for them. And again, two of these guys had to start. Wes Matthews scored 3 points. Grayson Allen scored one. They were starters. Pat Connaughton had two, and George Hill had none. Well, those are the four guys that were sharing the two guard positions that you had on the team because Chris Middleton wasn't out there. So you had decent scoring from Portis and Lopez sharing the center position. Giannis had another good game. Jrue Holiday had a good game, but you had three guys on the floor at any given time. The two-headed monster of Lopez and Portis were interchangeable. And then Giannis and Holiday. And the other two guys weren't scoring at all. And Boston knew this, and they didn't even bother to guard him because they weren't scoring at all. This, I'm not going to say it's the fault of these players, but only one of them would have been on the court most of the time were it not for the fact that Chris Middleton was hurt. You add to that, Grant Williams, who missed games 5 and 6 for Boston, comes out and scores 27 points as if they weren't deep enough. The team's sixth leading scorer goes off for 27 points. I mean, that's what they were up against, and it essentially became, it just shows you it's hard to repeat in the NBA, and your margin, if one guy goes down via injury, is very, very difficult. Having said all of that, so I guess I'm not surprised at all that the Bucks did not advance. I will tell you, however, I am, whatever the strongest word is for expressing surprise in sports, shocked almost doesn't do it justice. I am shocked at the other game, the game last night between Dallas and Phoenix. I'm surprised Dallas won. I am shocked that on Phoenix's home court in the third quarter, they were down by nearly 50 points. I thought all year Phoenix was the best team in the NBA, and I thought all year that they were the NBA champion. They were second last year. Everybody was a year older for the good other than Chris Paul, that they were just ready. They played better than everybody else. They had the best record in the league. They seemed to have it all there, and they not only didn't win it, Dallas's coach is a guy that when he coached the Bucks, I thought couldn't coach. Jason Kidd's the coach of the Mavericks. And anybody who was a, and man, now I get Jason was an assistant in the interim. Maybe he got a little more experience, learned a few things. But Dallas is a team with one major star. And I've always felt you need three to go anywhere in the NBA. Luka Doncic and a few guys that are really, really good. So I'm shocked by that result. I'm just shocked. Dallas plays Golden State. Golden State had some awful games in their series win over Memphis. They trouble putting away the Grizzlies without Ja Morant. Could Dallas go to the finals? I wouldn't think so, but Golden State looks flawed. Boston and Miami. I think Boston is the better team, but boy, I think Miami has a huge advantage in game one because Boston has to be close to drained, having just played on Sunday and now traveling to down to Miami, whereas Miami had rest. So if Miami wins, goes up 1-0, they have the advantage clearly in the series, but I do think Boston is the better team. Two very, very well-coached teams. All right, let's go to this story now. I have to cover up this person's identity because she asked me to. So I'm going to exclude certain details, but it's sure an interesting story. I hear about this from a self-described Belling baby for life. She's part of the graduating class at the Medical College of Wisconsin. Graduating from medical school is a big deal, and as she points out here, 4 years of undergraduate college, 4 years of medical school, now $200,000 in student loan debt. Yet on graduation day, which is Friday, they're telling her and all of the other graduates of the Medical College of Wisconsin that they have to wear masks at the ceremony. Masks are required while indoors by all attendees and participants. Speakers can remove their masks while at the podium to allow for better sound for the in-person and live stream experience. Speakers are asked to wear their masks walking to and from the podium. Now, let's just stop right here. This is the Medical College of Wisconsin that is presumably teaching these young people something about medicine. What is the science behind saying that someone, when they actually are opening their mouth and blowing out air and spitting saliva when they're speaking, they don't have to wear a mask, but when they walk to and from the podium, when presumably they're not doing anything, they have to wear a mask? There's no science to this at all. There's simply the reality that if they want people to hear the speaker, they probably shouldn't have a mask on when they're doing their speaking. But they aren't willing to cut the same slack for a graduate who's going to go up there and for the only time in his or her life be handed a medical school diploma where all sorts of people want to take snapshots of it, and for the rest of their life they have to be seen with one of these infernal masks on as if they're a surgeon performing surgery. I am told by the student that the medical college, by the way, is dropping its campus-wide mask mandate on June 6th. So the thing they're going to be dropping in 17 days anyway, they can't even drop for the graduation. Or, since they've established the premise that they're not going to make the speakers actually wear the mask, why don't they allow the graduates to take their masks off when they're at least going up there and getting the diploma for the photo? The answer, of course, is that it has nothing to do with medicine. There's certainly no science associated with the fact that everybody knows none of these graduates are going to be wearing masks until they get into the building when they're all seeing everybody, when they're hugging one another. None of them are going to have masks on when they're going over with their relatives. The relatives aren't going to have the masks on. The only time anybody's going to be wearing any of these masks is when they're sitting inside that building. It's all fake. It's all for show. There's nothing to do with medicine or science at all. But what it does indicate is that the empty suit who runs the Medical College of Wisconsin, who has a great proclivity for PR and being interviewed in softball questions, clearly doesn't care here about medicine at all. It's just public relations. It's putting on a show. Anyway, this student tells me, and it's the reason I can't identify her, that there's no way in you know what that she's going to have a mask on when she gets that diploma. I say good for her. What are they going to do, not give it to her? I would urge other students of the medical college, just defy them. Take the mask off. And if you're in the stands in there, the thing about one or two people, and this is not like riding on an airplane where you're trapped up in the sky, put the mask on and so on. You got 3,000 people sitting in the audience for this and 2,500 take them. What are they going to do? It was like, you know, when the Bucks had the mask requirement last year, they didn't enforce it because they knew they couldn't enforce it. Hardly anybody had them on, other than the people that wanted to have them on by choice. But the story, and the reason I shared the time with it here, in addition to the fact that I applaud the fact that this student is furious about the whole thing, is this. It just shows you how not individual practitioners, I don't blame the MDs themselves, but how medicine in America during COVID stopped being about sound medical decisions, stopped being about informed patient choice, stopped being allowing doctors to go out and think outside the box, and instead became a public relations show. The very medical community that will tell you that most cloth masks are worthless and even surgical masks become worthless when you touch your hands to them will require at this graduation people to wear masks simply because they know people will be watching. This is the quacks who run the medical college putting on a show for their fellow lefties and abusing students who paid a fortune in tuition by denying them this moment, forcing them to wear masks for probably the only time all week that they'll have them on. Not to stop the spread of COVID, but just so a giant dink can pose for more holy pictures and get plaudits from a politically correct left-wing media. I'm not going to encourage any civil disobedience, but I think it would be great if half the students just said, screw it, I'm going to take the mask off, and you better give me that diploma. I paid a fortune for it. 505 News Talk 1130 WISN. When we come back after the break, I will be giving you the 5 o'clock hour word in the Spring Green Cash Contest, and also a fascinating story that not only has relevance given the debate that we have over abortion now, but is an interesting examination in the whole argument over right-to-work legislation. Just because you are required to pay union dues, does that mean you have to give union dues to a union that murders people with your money? News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. I want to share a story with you here, and then when I'm done, I'm going to give you the 5 o'clock hour word in the Spring Green Cash Contest, right to work legislation. We passed it in Wisconsin when Walker was the governor. Right to work legislation means if you work at an employer that has a union contract, you not only don't have to pay union dues, you don't have to pay the union at all. It used to be in Wisconsin that you didn't have to be in the union, but you had to make a payment equal to dues to the union. So in other words, if we had a union here at our company and I would be forced to pay dues to that union or a payment to that union, even if I didn't want to be in it. A little over half the states now have right-to-work legislation that state that if you don't want to pay any money to the union, you don't have to. Some people say, well, that's not fair. The union's negotiating a contract for you. You should have to pay them something. Well, not everybody who owns a gun is a member of the NRA. The NRA, and I'm a member of the NRA, the NRA pays and defends, you know, defends the rights of all gun owners, not simply those that are members. If you believe in the cause, you pay money. If you don't, you don't. In any event, airlines are covered by federal employment legislation, not individual states' right-to-work laws. So if you work for an airline and they have a union in place, you have to make a payment to the union equal to the dues. That's the backdrop for the story. There is a lawsuit that's being filed by a former flight attendant for Southwest Airlines. Her name is Charlene Carter. Charlene Carter's story goes all the way back to 1996. She joined the Transportation Workers Union of America. But in 2013, she quit the union when she learned that her union dues were supporting causes like pro-abortion. Charlene is adamantly pro-life, and she said that as a matter of religious freedom, she should not have to have her union dues go towards supporting abortion. Since she refused to pay union dues or a like payment, she was fired by Southwest Airlines. She has been challenging this case, and it is now going to federal court. A federal judge has ruled that she can take her case to trial. The legal issue here is one of religious freedom. Can you compel someone to make a payment to a union if they're using the money in a way that violates your religious beliefs? Certainly someone who is opposed to abortion may have that belief for any number of reasons, one of which could be religion. But if unions are going to support legal abortion, can an employer, right-to-work legislation or not, force that person to give them money if the employee believes that the union is spending the money immorally? And obviously, advocacy of legal abortion for many people is the ultimate immorality. By the way, this whole campaign, they've come up with a new slogan here. It's not just pro-choice anymore. It's bans off our bodies. Well, nobody wants to put any hands on your ugly bodies. We're trying to keep your hands off the bodies of the babies that you want to kill, which is what the entire issue needs to be reframed as. This is simply an argument of whether or not unborn children are in fact human beings. If they are, nobody has a right to kill them. If they're not, if they're the same amount of humanity as a table, you can throw it in the garbage to your heart's content. So the people that are trying to argue that this is something about our bodies, that argument is as irrelevant as claiming that we don't have a right to tell you to stop belting your child in the head when you're holding it on your lap. Is the unborn child a human being that is worthy of protection? And does the Constitution of the United States give anyone a right to have an abortion, which I contend it does not? Standing up for Milwaukee, this is the Mark Belling Late Afternoon Show on News Talk 1130 WYSN. I'm going to try my best to not say the same damn thing that I say every time we have a terrible incident like the multiple shootings that occurred Friday night in the downtown Milwaukee Entertainment District. But it's hard not to say the same thing because it is the same thing over and over and over again. And there is no indication that anyone in the political, legal, or criminal justice system intends to change anything, meaning the situation will continue to get worse. Here's my fear, that Milwaukee is headed toward being the kind of disaster that downtown Chicago is. Lori Lightfoot, the mayor of Chicago, is ruining her city. Almost every weekend night, giant mobs form in which people are attacked and gunfire occurred. the Old Town area of Chicago was the most recent area to have this incident. It was happening a lot last year, and it appears to be accelerating this year, and there's every reason to think as the weather gets warmer, it will be an even greater problem. My big concern about the incident that occurred Friday night is the reason to believe that there may be another one, and another one, and another one, and another one, and another one. Now, part of this is not new. I made the comment some years ago after Milwaukee had to cancel an event called Riverwalk. I think it was called River Splash. That's what it was. It was like the first festival of the season. It was held kind of along the Riverwalk in downtown Milwaukee. It was an outdoor free festival. And I said, anytime you hold an outdoor free festival in Milwaukee, you're begging for trouble because people who don't have to pay anything are going to come in and call. And there were trouble. There was shooting. There were shootings. There were fights. And eventually they had to get rid of it. I fear the same is eventually going to occur with Jazz on the Park. When you have open-air events where anybody can simply draw up, you are attracting the attention of violent troublemakers. And as long as we have violent troublemakers that are willing to cause violent trouble, these events can be targeted. In a way, it's amazing that these huge gatherings for people to watch Milwaukee Bucks games didn't have any problems before this. First of all, it should be stressed that this event did not occur inside the confines of the Deer District. In fact, prior to the game, on Friday night, the Bucks announced that they were going to be limiting the Deer District crowd to 11,000. Clearly, they were concerned about how big these got to be. But the Deer District is simply the area where you can see the screens. It's the area inside, Juno on the north end. Does it go to State or is it State on the other side and then like sixth on the Fiserv Forum on the building on the one end? And then, that's the area that they're restricting the access to, but it doesn't stop 97 zillion other people from hanging around on the perimeter because they want to be part of the scene. So we had two or three, depending on which ones you count, because shooting incidents that occurred, one was a little bit farther away, one occurred an hour after the other, didn't appear to have anything to do with anything other than people went down there and wanted to commit violence when that was going on. Now, we don't have any details beyond that because John Chisholm's office hasn't charged anybody yet. So we don't have any criminal complaints. There were multiple arrests, and the police did indicate that a number of the people who were shot had guns themselves. It seems to me gang-related, and it may well be that some gangs who were going to have a fight decided to have a fight in public. There may be something beyond that. I don't know. But dollars to donuts, if the individuals are juveniles, in which case we won't be able to see their records, or if they are not juveniles, they are people that have been in trouble before and are probably free on some sort of release or some sort of bail. Everybody gets caught for the first time, but it's amazing how many of these cases are not people that are caught for the first time. Again and again and again and again, we've drawn attention to the fact that since we closed, we didn't close Lincoln Hills, since we scaled back Lincoln Hills, we have hardly any violent juvenile offenders in any kind of detention, and they're out there to commit crime after crime after crime. The lesson they've learned is they can do whatever they want because we let them do whatever they want. This problem is not unique to Milwaukee. It's going on in big cities all over the United States. And as many times as I may want to bring it up, nobody's going to change anything. The voters of Milwaukee gave 72% of the vote to Cavalier Johnson in the most recent election. He's not going to change anything. He voted to defund the police in the first place. Is he going to take on John Chisholm, who doesn't want to charge any violent criminal with anything anymore? No. Nothing's going to change so long as he's the mayor. The Milwaukee Police Association held a news conference with Rebecca Clayfish. I saw that the vice president of the union, Alex Ayala, was standing right behind Clayfish. I worry about Becky. Be careful with that, Ayala. He'll stab you in the back. The leadership of the Milwaukee Police Association is a joke. They had a tough-on-crime candidate for Mayor Bob Donovan. They wouldn't endorse him. They decided to suck up to Cavalier Johnson, showing that even Milwaukee police officers have been sold out by their incompetent sellout leadership. So what? They're demanding now change? Well, we want to get in good with Mayor Johnson. We know he's going to win anyway. Okay, good luck on that. Some Republican candidates for governor demanding that Governor Evers fire John Chisholm, the Milwaukee County DA. Now, he's an elected official. I'm not sure I support that idea. Beyond that, what do you think you're going to replace him with? Some other lefty hack from the DA's office? John Chisholm's elected by the voters in Milwaukee County. This is the problem, and every Democrat who lives in the area seems to be perfectly fine with his decision not to charge violent offenders and to treat the juvenile justice system in the cavalier fashion that they do. We are either going to start aggressively locking up juvenile offenders, whether it be at Lincoln Hills or wherever, and immediately start applying higher bail to people that are arrested for violent crimes in an attempt to get serious with this problem, or we're not. I did a story a couple of weeks ago. The other big issue that everybody's complaining about is the reckless driving in town. You got this clown of a judge, Milton Childs, public defender appointed by Tony Evers to be a judge. 2 years go by in which a woman drags her case out, running from the police, 6 mile high speed chase, slams into a car being driven by a woman who's got her 2 month old baby in the car. Got probation. I got the mayor's office to respond to my question by saying they didn't approve of that. Beyond that, Michael Murphy was the only alderman in town who ripped on Childs. So again, the point that I make it struggling to comment on an issue like this is just said the same thing over and over and over again. Lefties control the criminal justice system in Milwaukee. In Milwaukee County, they control the city government in Milwaukee. They're not interested in the input of any conservatives here. We conservatives have enough time getting the criminal justice system straightened out in more conservative areas like Waukesha County, where there's no indication at all that anybody's serious about dealing with the violent crime problem there either. So how are we supposed to get any reaction out of the Milwaukee area? So the takeaways that I can offer are this. You have right now a continuing ongoing boom in many components of downtown Milwaukee. The housing market just will not stop growing. It's confusing to me given the fact that Northwestern Mutual remains closed. Most of the office, or hardly, basically closed. Hardly anybody's in it. Most of the office towers still haven't returned to work, but there's still apparently demand for people to live in downtown Milwaukee. One big high-rise expensive is going up after another, after another, after another. They finally broke ground on the Couture. The supposedly all-wood building that the Russians are building is near completion. You got all of this going on. The entertainment district remains strong. Drawing the Bucks were trying to market the marketing rights for the Deer District to somebody to buy the name to it. They like the idea of the gathering thing. Lots of cities try to do these like live downtown things. You got people getting shot at right and left. That's going to put an end to it. So clearly there's a lot at stake here. Now there's concern, is this going to cost Milwaukee the Republican convention? Maybe it will, maybe it won't, but let's be honest, it's just this kind of thing is just as likely to occur in downtown Nashville as it is in downtown Milwaukee. All these cities, Milwaukee, Nashville, are run by lefties. And lefties aren't willing to get tough at all on crime. And the message to largely young offenders is, nothing happens to us. You wait and see with regard to, you know, they made a number of arrests after this. How many people will be charged? How will the cases proceed through the system? If they are juveniles, will they be tried as adults? Or will it be the typical Milwaukee County operation? If everybody expresses outrage, the case takes 2 years to walk its way through and 3 month sentences and suspended sentences and all of these other deals occur. So again, if it sounds like I've made these comments in the past, I have made these comments in the past. I was at the Gucks game Friday night, and I noticed when I was coming out of the parking ramp, usually it's very fast. I mean, it's not like the old stupid ramp they had at the Bradley Center. The traffic patterns are pretty good for the Fiserv Forum, plus I generally head east where most people aren't. Usually I'm out of there in 7 minutes, and it was taking forever and crawling and moving slowly. Now, part of it was Friday night. You have to cross through Water Street. So on, and I made a comment to the guy that I went to the game with, I wonder how many people are going to get shot down here tonight. I actually said that. But to be honest with you, I probably said that 55 other times too, because there are people getting shot in Milwaukee all the time. But you had that sense. It was a warm night. There's a crowd. There's crowds, and there's young people have guns. And again, for people to focus on this having to do with the basketball game and so on, the shootings occurred outside the Deer District. I don't even know if they pat you down for guns to go inside that fence, but they certainly don't pat you down just generally everywhere all over the, you know, unbounded region. So that's the extent of my comment on it. And long term, are we going to have gatherings like this? I mean, everything in terms of having gatherings in urban areas in America, Chicago, Milwaukee, everywhere. You know, it's all in jeopardy until we get over this notion that we are not going to treat juvenile offenders as the violent thugs that juvenile violent offenders are. And expecting to, something to come out of the mayor of Milwaukee, who's got one brother in jail on a shooting charge and a nephew in jail on a rape charge, 2 years after he voted to defund the police, is naive. You're not going to get anything out of Chevy Johnson on this. He'll hold a news conference and squeak away and say this, that, or the other thing, but you aren't going to see him get behind a push to have find an opponent to John Chisholm and run a tough-on-crime prosecutor in a Democratic primary. You're not going to see them call out clown-like judges like Childs who give probation to people who drive in high-speed chases into the side of a car with a two-month-old baby inside. So again, this is a, I'm going to end my comments and move on to what's going on with the Musk deal. Also, some comments on the baby formula shortage, but as I say, you tend to say the same things over and over and over again when cases like this occur, and I suspect in a couple of weeks something else is going to happen in Milwaukee or maybe even outside of Milwaukee. I mean, let's be honest with you. You had a murderer, convicted murderer, fight with police outside the Waukesha police station. And a court commissioner gave him a $1,000 bail. He's a convicted murderer. Fighting with cops in broad daylight. So fearless of the consequences. You simply have more criminals in Milwaukee, but the leniency and idiocy of people within the criminal justice system doesn't even seem to know any boundaries. And I still see that clown of a Commissioner Herring. He's still on there. You know, it's the guy that allowed the parade massacre guy to skate free and didn't enforce a child support order. You think if anybody would be cognizant of the mistakes making and allowing violent criminals to go free, he's got a murderer in front of him. $1,000 bail. Prosecutor asked for $2,000. No, that's too much. $1,000. But again, how many times have I made that point? Are any of the judges going to demand that we get rid of the clown-like, lousy court commissioners that pollute the Waukesha County bench? And not all of them are, but some are. Just as in Milwaukee County. I mean, Grace Flynn's going to be a court commissioner apparently until she croaks. And she's going to be releasing people on signature bonds until she croaks. And again, until people start changing any of that stuff, we're just going to have these same stories over and over and over. You made that point 90,000 times. I have, and you know what? It doesn't do any good, so I'm going to shut up and go to the break because I have interesting comments to make. We're going to go to the formula story next. Suddenly, Joe Biden has figured out that we have a shortage of baby formula. And he said it's because Abbott made this formula to kill children. No, they didn't. No, they didn't. This story is a microcosm of what happens when people who do not understand the free market are put in charge of things. Babies starve and desperate mothers hitting people over the head trying to find the last container of formula. News Talk 1130 WISN. Late afternoon show. The weather's going to cool off this week. Partly cloudy tonight with lows dropping into the 40s. Tomorrow, partly sunny and cooler with a chance for rain at night. We should get into the mid-60s inland, but much cooler than that. Low to mid-50s near the lake. By the way, that lake temperature is still to the low to mid-40s. Wednesday, morning rain showers, mostly cloudy and cool. Upper 50s inland, lower 50s near the lake. One day of a warm-up on Thursday, partly sunny and warmer. Might hit 80 inland and low 70s near Lake Michigan. it's a different product every other day that we're going to be talking about. There's a desperate shortage now of baby formula. I'm going to explain why it happened in a moment, but I don't want people to miss the forest because of the trees. The baby formula thing, while severe for people who need baby formula, is trees. The forest is the larger picture. We have shortages of everything, and everything I see indicates they're going to be getting worse. The president of Goya Foods, which is a huge food company that caters to the Hispanic market, says that we're facing a crisis approaching the summer. We're going to have shortages of all sorts of stuff. Our economy is breaking down. It's breaking down because we have inflation that has made the cost of raw materials extremely high, and we have a desperate worker shortage of not enough people to produce the products. Add to that essentially a shutdown of much of the Chinese economy. You've got a disaster here. The baby formula is merely one of them. So people have been drawing attention to the baby formula thing forever. The Biden administration has refused to seriously discuss this. One of the problems of the baby formula market is it is highly concentrated among a handful of companies. I mean, I don't know why I remember this. I swear to you, I don't know why I remember this. I just remember that when I was a kid, the baby formula was called, I don't mean the formula that they gave me, but like Brothers and Sisters was Similac. That's, in fact, still the dominant market share leader is Similac. Similac is made by Abbott Labs. The FDA came in and shut down production in the United States of Similac by Abbott Labs after suggestions that there were food poisoning problems with the baby formula. The press secretary to Joe Biden, the brand new press secretary, last week came out and said that this was done because the formula killed two infants. This is not true. As Abbott is desperately trying to point out, nobody has linked the baby formula produced by Abbott with anything. There appear to have been coincidental situations. In the meantime, Abbott has been begging to be able to resume production in the United States. They're bringing in baby formula that they produce in other parts of the world, but we can't ramp back up. This is so reminiscent of what happened with COVID. We shut down a major producer of baby formula for months, and then we sit back and are shocked that we don't have enough baby formula. Here's a tweet issued by Abbott Labs. At the White House press conference today, the press secretary mistakenly said that our formulas were tainted and killed two infants. A comprehensive investigation by Abbott, the FDA, and CDC found no evidence that our formulas caused infant illnesses. CDC concluded its investigation with no finding of a link between our formulas and infant illness. We conduct microbiological tests on products to distribute, and no Abbott formula distributed to consumers tested positive for Chronobacter or Salmonella. All retained product tested by Abbott and the FDA during the inspection of the facility came back negative for Chronobacter and or Salmonella. No Salmonella was found at the Sturgis facility. So you may ask the question of why won't Biden's administration clear the production for Abbott to resume at their big facility in the United States? And the answer is that they can't make this connection between cutting off supply and shortages of products to the consumer. You add to this all of the other components that are going on, and then the unbelievable misinformation. The press secretary, because Biden can't talk about anything without screwing things up, the purpose of the press secretary, I understand we have a brand new one. Jen's now at MSNBC, and JPG or whatever her name is the press secretary. For the press secretary to link an American company with two deaths when it's not even true. The level of incompetence at the top of this country right now is terrifying. Now let's get to Biden himself. Listen to this comment, and then you're going to be blown away by who felt the need to debunk it. Biden. This is from Joe Biden. Off his Twitter account. You want to bring down inflation? Then let's make sure the wealthiest corporations pay their fair share. Now let's start with this. What does inflation have to do with raising taxes on the wealthy? You might argue that raising taxes on the wealthy is a good idea or a bad idea, but it doesn't have anything to do with inflation. If anything, raising costs for large corporations might be inflationary by enforcing them to add an additional cost that they have to pass on to their product. But the Biden tweet is literally a non sequitur, or an indication, again, that Democrats have no concept at all about how the economy works. Anyway, there's a retort to this. It comes from one of the better-known lefties in the world, the second richest man in the world, Jeff Bezos. The newly created disinformation board should review this tweet, or maybe they need to form a new non sequitur board instead. Raising corporate taxes is fine to discuss. Taming inflation is critical to discuss. Mushing them together is just misdirection. In fact, the administration tried hard to inject even more stimulus into an already overheated inflationary economy, and only Mnuchin saved them from themselves. Excuse me, only Manchin saved them from themselves. A reference to Joe Manchin refusing to provide the 50th vote in order to pass the stimulus bill. Inflation is a regressive tax that most hurts the least affluent. Misdirection doesn't help the country. That was Jeff Bezos. A reference to the fact that the Democrats are trying to spend even more money, and the reason, one of the reasons we have so much inflation is we've dumped all this artificial money into the economy, driving up the prices for all of these items at the same time that we have a desperate shortage of workers. I've made this point more than once. I'm going to make it again as we go to the break. Every socialist economy I have ever seen has desperate product shortages. It affects the quality of life to the point that often revolutions start. The food line is the originator of many revolutions that have brought down socialist regimes. The reason that product shortages occur under socialism is an economic system that does not work. The economic system that works is one that allows people to make money for doing something. Whenever we allow people to make money without doing anything or take away the money that people are making for doing something, they stop doing it. And then shortages occur. This has happened so long as socialism has been tried. It happens again and again and again and again and again. The fact that the voters of the United States, thanks to a bunch of crybabies in Georgia having a snit because they think Donald Trump had the election stolen from him, gave control of the United States Senate to the Democrats when they won those two seats in the runoff election in Georgia. The Democrats have total control of this country. They have radicalized themselves and they have implemented pure socialistic policies. This is the logical result of it. You add to that a component that no one wants to mention, but I'm going to introduce right now. In the middle of all of this, we have allowed who knows how many millions of illegal immigrants to cross the border. Well, whether they're buying it themselves or social service groups are buying stuff for them, these are items that have to be spent on new people who are residents of the United States. It's another thing that creates shortages. Furthermore, while many illegal immigrants who are long-term residents of the United States are indeed working individuals who are carrying more weight for this country than a lot of deadbeats sitting on welfare, I don't think any of the ones that have crossed the border since Joe Biden became president have found jobs. So you have all of these people that are making demands on the supply chain, but nobody's contributing to it. Add to this the incredible amount of socialism that goes on, and you have the recipe for the incredible shortages that we have that creates inflation, which makes shortages even worse. It's a vicious cycle that can only be ended, sadly, by slowing down the economy, perhaps with a recession, which is all the more reason why we never should have allowed this to occur in the first place. But it happened deliberately. The takeaway in this segment is this. There's somebody to blame for this. It's the people who voted for Joe Biden. It's your fault. Seriously, we didn't have any of these problems. It's your fault. You've seen that the Democratic Party is socializing itself. Now, I keep hearing the reason that they didn't put in Bernie Sanders is they didn't want a socialist as president. So you voted for a senile guy that hired a bunch of socialists to surround him, and they're running the country. This is the end result of it. And it's just like the crime situation we were describing in Milwaukee. Do not expect this to correct on its own. It will only get worse. The only thing that corrects it is if you make changes to stop doing the things that are causing the problems. But don't think for a moment that it's going to dawn on Joe Biden that he needs to change anything. I swear, does Joe Biden even know there's a shortage of infant formula? The tweet that was put out on his behalf that said, or the statement that was made by the press secretary said, Abbott killed two children with their formula. Is it even true? If the press secretary can't get it right, and she's the one that's whispering into Joe's weirdo ears, does he even know what's going on? Well, again, I take no blame for this. I believe I was one of those that told you it'd be a disaster to turn this country over to these people. And the disaster's turning out to be even worse than many feared. As for the rest of you, well, you don't have that guy issuing his mean tweets anymore. Hope you're happy. You think we got violence now? Wait until there are food shortages. And I don't mean of just one or two items. You go into a grocery store and they're out of this, that, or the other, well, you can buy something else to eat. Wait until the shelves are just empty. Oh, that won't happen. Would you have ever thought that something as basic as baby formula we'd run out of? It's in my lifetime, I've never seen shortages like this in the United States. A few times we ran out of gas and when we'd have oil embargoes. Wholesale shortages of just about, maybe people are older than me who go back to the Depression can remember it. Maybe there were some shortages during the war when we shut down some of the factories. My life, I've never seen anything like this. Again, he's only been in there for 16 months. What do you think it's going to be like in August or October? What if they keep the Congress and there's no check on this? What if Kamala gets in there? When I say I don't blame May, I'm serious about that. Blame the people who voted for Joe Biden. Blame the people who try to vote out Ron Johnson to keep the Democrats control of the Senate. But don't blame the rest of us who understand full well what was going to happen and understand full well why it's happening. This whole story with Musk, is he going to call off the Twitter deal? How many Twitter accounts are fake bots? Like everything else with Musk, this is a quite interesting story. Also, I have a story to report on the sighting of something that I didn't see, but I have never seen before. By the way, that could be the lunar eclipse last night, which I didn't see, but that has that, not what I'm... Did you see it? You actually didn't get... I mean, I live near the lake. It was too hazy, and it didn't shine through. And maybe, by the time that it was straight above me, I was in bed. But it's one of those things where there's enough picture. I've seen enough pictures now of the red moon, and that I didn't really. I mean, I was sitting outside, and I did look, but there was a haze coming off the lake when the moon was rising, and there was nothing there for me to see. And I know I was looking in the right direction. I do know this. The sun and the moon both do rise in the east, and I was looking to the east, and I remember the time of the moon rising and all of that. But no, something else. Sighting. We'll get to that in a moment.
I know you can see me now. Here's a surprise.
News Talk, 1130 WYSN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. I screwed something up, and I'm going to correct it right now. There was a story that I wanted to reference during that discussion on inflation, and I forgot to mention and tie it in. So I'm going to work that story in right now and then get to the story with regard to Musk and Twitter. There's a coffee chain. I don't think many of you have heard of it because it's not in our part of the country. It's a coffee chain that primarily works as a drive-through. It's called Dutch Brothers. It has grown at astonishing rate. It started out west. It's in the southwest and western portion of the United States, and they want to keep expanding in that part of the country by opening more and more stores. The stock price has gone up over the last number of months. There's been a buzz about it, and it has an unbelievably loyal following. You know, these coffee places are. The company went public, and it's been a very trendy stock on the stock market. The stock has crashed. The stock crashed after the company, several days ago, announced that they were going to have a major miss on their earnings, and they feel that the problem is going to continue for months. Here's the problem. Dutch Brothers says their raw material costs and their labor costs have exploded, and they've lost the ability to pass it all on and higher prices to the customer. In other words, as they charge more for their coffee, their sales go down, fewer people want to buy, and if they don't charge more, they can't cover the added costs of everything. Like, I'm sure they have the lattes and all this stuff and a couple of donuts or this, that, or the other thing, plus the help and whatever other costs that they associate with. So here you have a company that had been experiencing significant growth, hot and trendy as can be, very loyal customers, yet they find they're losing customers because the customers aren't willing to pay prices much higher than they're paying now, and the company's trapped in between. If this can happen to a company with incredible brand loyalty like one of these high-end gussied-up coffee chains, this is what's happening everywhere in our economy with the inflation squeeze. Eventually, companies can't pass the price increases on because the consumer doesn't buy. So the company ends up losing the ability to be profitable at all. This is, in the end, what solves the inflationary problem. You go into a deep recession, all sorts of people are laid off, and that ultimately cures the inflation. The problem is letting it happen in the first place, and as I mentioned, this company, Dutch Brothers, which was as hot as can be, the stock has just fallen apart. It's down like 40% in the last 4 or 5 days. The company's comments, after all this incredible growth story, everybody thought this is the next Starbucks, this is the next whatever the fast food thing is, and maybe it still will be, maybe it still won't. But if they're facing these kinds of pressures, imagine what's going on everywhere else in the economy. This is, what do they call it when they want to find out if there's problems at a coal mine, send a canary down there. This is the canary in the coal mine story. Now, to the Musk story. Elon Musk stated late last week, well, wait a minute. Twitter's not being straight with me on how many accounts they have. The deal's on hold. Many people think that Musk was bluffing all along and that he's been looking for an excuse to get out of the deal. Others disagree. The issue that he raises, though, the so-called fake bots, fake accounts. How many Twitter accounts are actually real people using Twitter as opposed to artificially created accounts that don't exist, that aren't tied to anybody, simply created by some operation or a computer program or something or another for the purposes of increasing the counts and the views that they have and so on? Musk says the numbers that have been given to him by Twitter are untrue. Twitter is denying this. Now, first of all, it's a relevant story on the numbers because everybody's reacted to so many of these stories on social media. How many customers do you have? How many accounts do you have? And then when somebody posts something, it's got 97 trillion views, this, that, and the other thing. If it turns out that all of those views are inflated, the answer is misleading. From the perspective of Musk, he's saying, look, when I agreed to buy the company, I thought it's because it had a certain number of account users. I now find that that number was inflated by you and the company. It may well be that Musk is simply now trying to drive down the price. Musk said today, well, maybe I could buy the company for less than the $54 a share I offered. Is the deal off or not? Well, there's been an interesting thing with regard to this. Musk has offered $54. It was said to be a done deal. Yet the stock price never traded at $54. If you thought the deal was going to go through, if the stock's sitting there at 44 and the sale price is 54, this is the easiest 20% gain on your money of all time. Yet people weren't buying it up. That means that from the investing community, there's been doubt on this all along. Right now, Twitter is trading at 37, and Musk is saying, well, maybe we can still do the deal at a lower price. I think one of the things that we've learned is that for all of Twitter's claims about censoring and stopping people from putting up false posts, the ultimate false post was Twitter itself by claiming it had as many users as it does. In fact, many of those users are not real at all. They're simply fake, and it may well be that Twitter was always looking the other way because it serves their purposes to make it look like there's millions and millions and millions of people on Twitter, even though many of them are simply computer programs aimed at being fake Twitter accounts. I said there's a sighting of something that I've never seen, but it was seen by somebody that I know. Any idea what that might be? A good one would have been the blood moon or whatever it was last night, which I didn't see, and somebody else did see it, but I'm pretty sure I've seen one of those in the past. They say that we're not going to have another one until 2025. Well, okay, I can wait for that. Waited 50 years for the Bucks to win a championship, so am I devastated that they didn't repeat this year? No, you got to give it like 3 years and you start having that thing that you have with Rodgers. Oh, is this going to be his only Super Bowl? How long are we going to have Giannis? Are we going to be able to get a second one out of the whole Giannis thing as long as he's here and so on? Bigger question will be what changes the Bucks. The Bucks actually have a first-round draft choice. I didn't think we had one for 11 years because of all we had to trade for Drew, but they are gonna have one. The Middleton injury showed, though, that they are not an injury-proof team. That the loss of Chris meant that they couldn't beat Boston. Now, I think this could well be like how the Brewers every year they get knocked out of the playoffs. It's by the team that wins the World Series, and thus they're getting knocked out. Was it as bad as it looks? Boston might be the best team in the NBA, and that we'll see. Look at these four. And anybody who at the beginning of the year said the final four in the NBA was going to be Boston, Miami, Dallas, and Golden State, that is not one person exists who thought those four teams. In fact, I would have thought most people wouldn't have had any of those four at the beginning of the Dallas was thought to be pretty much nothing other than Luka, and nobody had any faith in Jason Kidd. Golden State has stunk for two or three years. We didn't know if Klay Thompson's coming back would transform them all that much. Boston, as you mentioned, was a 500 team that was disjointed at the end of last year, and Miami does it with mirrors. I mean, great coaching, but everybody says you need to have three superstars in order to win a championship. Miami doesn't have one. He's not a superstar. He's a star. But, I mean, of that elite MVP caliber superstar, Jimmy's not in the top 10 players in the league, which is where I would put superstar. They have stars. But anyway, so we're going to get back to that sighting thing, and then I'm going to go away. So if you want to know what that sighting is, you got to keep listening to 621 News Talk 1130 WIC.
It's time for Rapid Traffic.
News Talk 1130 WISN, Mark Belling, late afternoon show. I still remember the first time I saw a Tesla on the road. I can place exactly where it was. It was obviously in the extreme early days. I was in Miami Beach. I was outside a famous restaurant named Joe's Stone Crab, and there was one parked right out front. By the way, you go to Joe's Stone, you can't go there now because they're closed in the summer. That Tesla still always parked in front. Clearly, it was owned by the place, and I don't know if the owner owned it and he just parked it in front, but there was always the Tesla. And it's the first time I saw one on the road. Obviously, now you can't go on the road without seeing a Tesla. They're everywhere. I did not see this, but a guy that I know texted it to me. He has a photo of himself driving behind a Rivian R1 truck. I have not seen a Rivian on the road. It's got temporary plates in the place where the tag is supposed to be, and it's hard for me to see from the photo, but it looks to me like it's an Illinois-issued temporary plate, which is neither here nor there. So Rivian, which has had a real problem getting its assembly line up and running, they have sold and produced some vehicles, but it's been slow. So I have not yet seen, or I've seen Rivians like at an auto show and so on, but I've never seen one actually driving on the road or parked on the side of the street. I suspect it's only a matter of days before they're seeing them. But whether or not they can ever get to the point of Tesla, I have my doubts about that, if for no other reason than almost every automaker has 3 or 4 or 5 electric vehicles in the pipeline right now. And Rivian has to compete with all of those. Tesla has the advantage of having been first. But even then, we're in a pickup truck world, and Tesla's pickup truck still seems to be about a year away from any sales on it. And Ford's F-150 Lightning is probably going to come to market. That's the electric version of the biggest selling vehicle in North America, the Ford F-Series. There, Ford's the Lightning is probably going to get to market before the Tesla pickup truck. And with that, it's the end of today's program. But the good news is we'll have another one tomorrow.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until then. Who cares about the clouds if we're together? Just sing a song.